Delgado is their candidate for Congress, end quote. The CLF says it did not coordinate the ad with the Faso campaign. Days after the Democrat Delgado won the June 26 primary to run against the Republican, Faso began the campaign by attacking the lyrics of the old rap album by A.D. The Voice. Then on July 13th, the Republican-backed Super PAC, the Congressional Leadership Fund, began paying for a radio advertisement airing locally in the Albany and Poughkeepsie media markets centered on Delgado's records and lyrics. As recently as July 26, Faso made a statement about Delgado's hip-hop lyrics. Now the CLF, the U.S. House Republican Political Action Committee, has a second radio ad on local stations about the 2006 recording. Delgado responded on July 27, saying, and I quote, "I again call on John Faso to disavow these divisive attacks. He should apologize on behalf of his supporters who created this hateful ad. John Faso's strategy is 100% predicated on his low opinion of his constituents." Dr. Gerald Benjamin, a SUNY New Platts professor, Faso's close friend, recently acknowledged the congressman's divisive use of race and respectfully apologized for his own commentary on the issue. Now it's Faso's turn, end quote. Read the full story in the Times Herald Record. Anna Sanders is reporting for the New York Post. The campaigns of various candidates for the state office have accepted campaign contributions from corporate donors in excess of the $5,000 cap mandated by New York election law, according to a Post investigation. Governor Andrew Cuomo's campaign has kept at least $27,000 from corporate donors. Public advocate Latia James accepted at least $5,000 in contributions for her state attorney general campaign. And GOP gubernatorial candidate Mark Molinaro took thousands from three corporate donors using the same address, a possible violation of campaign law, Sanders writes. Blair Horner, executive director of the New York Post Interest Research Group, said, and I quote, "This law has been routinely violated. I don't know of anyone punished for doing this," end quote. The Post reported earlier this month that Lieutenant Governor candidate Jemani Williams received $50,000 for his campaign from three different firms that gave above the limit. The campaign said it will return the money and Williams will not take any corporate money going forward. Read the full story in the New York Post. Diane Pinero Zucker is reporting for the Daily Freeman. Juan Carlos Alonso Vasquez, the Kingston chef who was picked up by Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers July 18th, was subsequently found to be in the country illegally, the federal agency said last week. Vasquez, 29, has lived in Kingston since leaving Mexico 10 years ago. Brandy Walters, restaurant manager at The Anchor in Kingston, said he has been head grill chef for the past 2 years. He is now being held at the Orange County Jail, according to an ICE online detainee locator. In an email statement, ICE wrote, and I quote, "Juan Vasquez is an illegally present citizen and national of Mexico. He entered the United States at an unknown place and time in violation of immigration law and was arrested by ICE officers July 18th in Kingston, New York. He is currently in ICE custody pending removal proceedings," end quote. In a written statement, Ulster County Executive Mike Hine expressed dismay over the, and I quote, "flawed immigration policy that is being abused at the federal level," end quote, and voiced support for Vasquez. Hine said he has reached out to the governor's office about the case. Deputy County Executive Ken Cronell says that Hine's statement stands and, I quote, "has nothing to do with the legal status of the individual," end quote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org.
Here's today's congressional campaign update with news about Representative John Faso, Republican from Kinderhook, his Democratic opponent Antonio Delgado, the rest of the campaign for the New York's 19th Congressional District.
David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. U.S. Representative John Faso has joined five of his upstate Republican congressional colleagues to urge Governor Andrew M. Cuomo to remove the state's tourism signs along New York's highways. In a letter dated July 26, The group reminded the governor the state is risking $14 million in federal funding if it fails to take down the signs in compliance with federal regulations. The state spent more than $8 million on the I Love New York campaign. The State Department of Transportation maintains the signs are safe and will work with the federal government to resolve the issue amicably. In February, the Federal Highway Administration notified the state of its intentions to withhold federal highway funding if the state does not take the signs down by September the 30th. DOT spokesman Joseph Morrissey said, and I quote, "We believe these signs provide valuable wayfinding information to motorists and tourists. Out of respect for the ongoing process, we are not in a position to comment on the content or timeline of those discussions. However, we fully expect to have a mutually beneficial agreement in place well before the September deadline," end quote. Read the full story at Capital Confidential.
Yes, every week millions of people take time out to have a good laugh. A laugh at the expense of radio's top comedians. People like you. A business is like a ship, and whether it sinks or floats depends upon the captain. And you know what it is when the crew revolts against the captain.
Yes, matinee.
That's mutiny! Matinee. I'm ashamed of all of you, but you the most, Mary. Imagine you being the ringleader after all I've done for you.
Speaking of television, there was a rumor around that Milton Berle wasn't on this last week.
100 saloons closed down. Milton Berle had virus X.
X, he can't spell pneumonia, hey?
He must have been pretty sick.
Well, I don't know how a germ can even get at Berle. He has enough mold on his jokes to make his own penicillin. We'll live to see the day Burl gets applause on this program. It must have been a recording someone sneaked in. Well, what's new this week, Portland?
And in California, there's a law that gives women equal rights with men. It's called community property. Community property. That's Henry. Now that you've given me my half of your salary, get up off of my half of the Davenport and go change your half of the baby.
Somebody ever thinks up an idea as good as I think up, they got to beat me at it, that's all. This one is a Lulu, Doc Gamble Day. What an inspiration. I got this town hopping like a barefoot kid on a hot sidewalk.
Well, I think it's wonderful anyway.
You bet, and when he finds out that I personally thought this idea up in his honor, I'll bet he'll never send us another bill.
Everybody is here. What's the matter? Couldn't you get tickets to see Death of a Salesman? Or you'd rather come here tonight and see the death of a comedian? I really feel wonderful. I do. I just paid my income tax. I was so lucky this year they let me keep my mother.
Duffy Salmon, whether you like meat, feed, ask you to mind, you're speaking. Duffy ain't here. Hello, Duffy. Huh? Yeah, quite a party here last night.
Those radio stars are paid-up life members in good standing of millions of American homes. They can keep you home from bridge parties, movies, well, just about anything, just to listen to their programs. What's more important, they can get you to buy the sponsor's product, whether you need it or not. Few people probably realize the preparation that goes into Bob Hope's flip treatment of jokes, Fred Allen's dry and multisyllabic humor, the bungled attempts of speech of Archie of Duffy's Tavern, or the situations that Jack Benny finds himself. The comedy gag writer is truly a forgotten soul. But if you don't mind being forgotten, have a terrific sense of humor, and what's more important, can put it down on paper, the top comedians are waiting right now with check in hand. Writing for the comedy show is a field that's wide open. During the next half hour or so, maybe you'll decide that you can write comedy material. You're listening to tape recordings of parts of the top comedy shows on the air today. There's a reason for each of them appearing. Each of the programs represented was listened to at least five times in an effort to select the situation that would illustrate some phase of comedy writing for radio. As you listen, notice how the dialogue builds to the punch or funny line. Remember, in writing a joke, let there be only one idea expressed, so the listener will have no trouble in following it. One of the favorite devices of writers is the running gag, or in other words, the reappearance of one comedy bit throughout the show. The running gag can either be dialogue or sound effect, or both combined. It can be repeated by the same character or by different persons on the program. Usually, the other members of the cast use it with a new twist or a new situation. Now, let's drop in on the Jack Benny Show, one of the big consumers of the running gag. The Benny Show is not built on gags. The writers set to work on a script with one idea in mind. Their philosophy is, let's have a good time. Forget the jokes. Jack and his gang may be in Palm Springs one week, at a birthday party the next, or spending the day at the races. The writers will not use a line, no matter how funny, if it doesn't fit the character. Here's how one Benny Show started. Jack is trying to get to Santa Anita Racetrack. Notice the use of the running gag with dialogue and with that wonderful prop, Jack's Maxwell.
Ladies and gentlemen, once every year, Jack Benny decides to tempt fate by going out to Santa Anita for the races. Yesterday was that day. So let's go back and pick up Jack and Rochester in the car.
Gee, Rochester, I can't wait to get to the racetrack.
Me too, boss.
It's a good idea starting early. We miss all the heavy traffic. You know, Rochester, such a beautiful day. Let's put the top down.
The top is down.
Then why is it so dark?
We ain't out of the garage yet.
Oh, well, let's hurry. Don't drive too fast, Rochester.
I won't, boss.
Yadda-dee-da-dum, da-dee-da-dum, da-dum, da-dee-da-dum. Say, Rochester, there's a house that looks just like mine.
It is yours. We ain't out of the driveway yet.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, let's get going. Ah, this is the life. Top down, beautiful day, balmy weather, sunshine. It sure is swell.
It sure is.
You know, Rochester, sunshine is the... Uh-oh. I think it's going to rain.
I don't think so, boy.
Then why did it get so dark?
The car slipped into reverse. We're back in the garage again.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Rochester, we'll never get to Santa Anita. Now, come on, we've got to pick up Miss Livingston.
In that running gag, the writers took advantage of one of radio's most precious belongings, the recognition device. Fibber McGee's closet, Red Skelton's expression, I do'd it, and Jack Benny's Maxwell are so established in the listener's mind that they can be used to great advantage for pointing up a spot, ending one, or for other purposes. They're always surefire material if used with discretion. They can become hackneyed if overdone. During 7 years, the expression, "'Tain't funny, McGee," hasn't lost its potency. That, again, is the recognition device. For another short look at the running gag, listen to this piece of business on the same Benny program. Jack and Mary are at the racetrack now.
Say, Mary, let's go out and get a hot dog.
But, Jack, we're in the clubhouse. Let's have lunch here.
Well... All right. A waiter. Waiter.
Yeah.
We'd like to get something to eat. What would you suggest?
A bib. You look like the sloppy type.
Never mind that. Now, what can we get in a hurry?
Well, we have roast pork, corned beef, leg of lamb, sirloin tips, and bacon and eggs.
Bacon and eggs sound good. Are the eggs fresh?
Ooh, are they?
Oh, well, I'll have that. Mary, how about you, Mary? Would you like bacon and eggs?
Ooh, would I?
ordinary. Just bring us our orders, waiter, as quickly as you can.
Yes, sir, and I'll seat you at that table over there. That's number one.
A little later in the show, guest star Ronald Coleman adds to the running gag.
Hello, Benita.
Hello, Mary. Hello, Jack. Hi, Ronnie. Look who's here.
Well, hello, Ronnie. Aren't you surprised at meeting me here?
Oh, am I?
Well, those were two examples of the running gag. You're probably saying about this time, why, sure, I get the idea, but how do I go about writing a joke? Before you can write good comedy material, you've got to have a background of some of the topics and devices that are used by gag writers. So let's go on. Another large portion of radio comedy depends on insult. The insults range from purely physical indignities to degrading remarks about clothes, work, mental condition, almost anything else. Bob Hope and Milton Berle use this type very effectively. Don Quinn, the writer for Fibber McGee and Molly, uses insult in a little different manner. Should there be a routine of insults, everyone involved must have an even break. That is, the insulted get the chance to retaliate. Even then, Quinn says, the attack must carry an undertone of, "We're just kidding, folks." Here's some of Don Quinn's work.
Come in. Hello, Doctor. So nice to see you.
Thank you, my dear. Hello, McGee.
Hi, sinus keeper. How's business? Your patients all coming along as expected, or are some of them getting well?
Now, McGee, that's neither polite nor funny.
Nah, he makes me tired.
As a matter of fact, Doctor, we were just remembering a while ago how many times you've saved McGee's life.
Yes. Fool that I am. Did I ever tell you, Molly, that the medical board got so interested in his case that they called me in to tell them about it?
No kidding, Doc. You mean they wanted to know how you saved my life?
Well, they didn't care how, but they wanted to know why. And do you know I couldn't think of a reason?
Well, I'll say one thing about you, Tweezer Squeezer.
Save it. Save it, vacuum top. I'm in no mood for banter. I'm going home to take a nap.
That was a very mild type of insulting humor compared to the action that takes place on some of the other comedy shows. We'll come back to insults later on. Right now, let's look at one of radio comedy's most often used combinations. The use of exaggeration and the painting of a silly or ridiculous picture in the listener's mind by the means of words. Practically every comedy show uses this device. Jokes of this type are usually written by someone throwing the straight line over and over again until someone comes up with a punchline. Suppose the writers for Duffy's Tavern were trying to tell about a fight that took place, and they wanted to use exaggeration. Now, the straight line might go something like this. Was the fight really rough? That line would be given over and over again until someone came up with a good punchline that exaggerated the situation and at the same time formed a silly picture in the mind. Here's what came out.
Duffy, you should have seen the place. There were so many teeth scattered around, the floor looked like it was smiling. What a brawl.
If you think that was exaggeration, listen to the master of the exaggerated and ridiculous humor, Bob Hope.
Let's go over and see my uncle's display.
Now, which uncle is that?
Burbank Hope. He's got a new way to raise peaches. When he plants the seed, he pours some tequila over it.
Tequila's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, but that way you don't have to pick the peaches. They come up to the house, knock on the door, and say, as soon as I shave off this fuzz, I'll be ready for breakfast.
There is exaggeration and the ridiculous at its peak. The gag gets a laugh for several reasons. When this was recorded, Hope's program was originating from the San Bernardino Orange Show. So the subject of fruit was topical. The reference to tequila helped the joke because it's something that people are familiar with. Finally, the ridiculousness of the joke struck the listener, and they responded by laughing. The use of a specific word, such as tequila, strengthened that joke. If the inclusive word liquor had been used instead, it's doubtful if the gag would have survived. To illustrate the point again, when Hope says...
You know what the subway is. That's the super chief with a Brooklyn accent.
The specific use of super chief is one of the key words. If Hope had said fast train instead of super chief, there wouldn't be any joke. In gag writing, remember, the use of a specific word will strengthen practically any joke. By this time, perhaps you can see some of the devices that are used to get laughs on the radio comedy show. Insults, exaggeration, painting a ridiculous picture, and the use of a specific word are some we've heard so far. Now listen carefully to Bob Hope combine all of these gimmicks into a short routine. The insult is there. It forms a ridiculous picture in the mind by exaggerating, and specific words are used. Here's Hope.
Spending in his income tax is always a problem for Jack Benny. It's pretty tough getting a mattress into a mailbox. But what's the difference? You can't take it with you. When Jolson found out you couldn't take it with you, he had pockets sewed in his skin. And Crosby doesn't send in his tax. The revenue man just stands in front of his house with a Hoover vacuum cleaner and sucks up what spills out the window.
Well, that's the way Bob Hope does it. So far, we've heard some of the elements that go into the construction of radio gags. Now, there are three departments of humor to which a radio program can lean. Gags, situations, and comedy characterization. If the emphasis is on gags, it's like the Bob Hope or the Milton Berle show. If situation comedy is the strong point, it's like the Aldrich family. And if characterization is the chief ingredient, it's like the Jack Benny show. Most of the examples of radio comedy have been chosen from the Benny show because the writers use both gags and situations around the characters. It's one of the best written comedy shows on the air today. You know, it's impossible to illustrate all the principles of gag construction and the different speech forms that are used in creating or building comedy. These recordings point up the most often used and most widely adaptable forms. One of these is the two-way gag told in dialogue between two performers, one taking a straight line and the other the punchline. This particular form is the basis of most radio comedy and has hundreds of variations. Now notice the construction of this gag between Jack Benny and a car salesman.
Gee, the more I see of this car, the more I like it. But tell me, Mr.
Call me Plain Bill.
Well, look, a plain bill. What are all these other buttons for?
Well, they're for the heater, the radio, the light, and the top.
Uh-huh. But what's this red button for?
Oh, that red button is for emergencies.
Emergency?
Yes, like if you stall the car on the railroad tracks and the train is coming at 100 miles an hour, you press the red button.
And that gets the car off the track?
No, it makes a reservation for you at Forest Lawn.
Did you notice how that gag was strengthened by the use of specific words that we mentioned before? Now you can put some variations on that pattern. Repetition is always popular. In repetition, the same thing is repeated for the build or the straight line, and may or may not be repeated for the punchline. In this next illustration, the punchline is not a repetition, but a switch. But the punchline is immediately topped with a repetition of the straight line. Well, if that sounds confusing, listen to this dialogue between Jack Benny and Mel Blanc in a scene from their version of The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Well, we'll just have to try and bluff them. Hey, you, come here. Are you a Mexican bandit?
Si.
I suppose your men are tough.
Si.
I guess they would kill us at a drop of a hat.
Si.
What's your name?
Si.
Sai?
Si.
Si.
That was an illustration of repetition, an extension of the two-way gag form. Here is another often used extension of that same form. This is the use of an abrupt vocal change or intonation, and sometimes a sound effect is used. For a perfect example of this device, let's join Jack Benny and the car salesman once more.
But don't forget, we do make liberal allowances on trade-in.
Well, my car's right outside. Suppose you come along with us and appraise it.
Yes, well, I'd be very glad to.
Right this way.
Now, which one of these cars is yours?
Oh, it's parked down the street a little ways. There it is right there.
You mean that blue Kaiser?
No, it's behind the Kaiser.
Oh, the gray DeSoto.
No, my car's between the Kaiser and the DeSoto. Here it is. Well, I'll admit it doesn't look like much right now, but a little paint and polish and she'll be as good as new.
Those last two gag routines were examples of repetition and the use of an abrupt vocal change or intonation. Now we have a couple of examples of topping. A topper is a punchline following a punchline, where the previous punchline is topped and actually plays the straight line for the next topper. Ozzie and Harriet use this device quite frequently in their show. Here's the way they do it.
Harriet, I'm surprised at you. How can you take this sitting down?
Catherine, a better cook than you are. Will neater than our boy. Thorny handier around the house than I. They probably think their cat can beat up our dog.
I have news for you. It happened this morning.
Their puny little cat beat our big, strapping Nick? It probably wasn't a fair fight.
Well, as a matter of fact, it didn't start out very fair. He was asleep.
Well, there you see. Nick was asleep and that sneaky
No, dear,
cat.
The cat was asleep.
Well, no wonder. He'd had more rest than Nick. A challenge, Harriet. It's our family against their family.
Do you get the idea? Each succeeding line tops the preceding one. The proceeding line is often in itself a punchline. Coming up now is an example of an excellent topping routine. It takes place between Phil Harris and Jack Benny. One of the lines I might explain beforehand. Jack has been getting ready for television by practicing dancing at home, and he's been using the ironing board for a runway. Notice also the twist on this gag. It's also an example of repetition, but the final punchline is not repeated in its original form. This is a topping routine based on strong characterization and using the pattern of repetition.
Well, I just received this circular from an automobile company, and I've been thinking maybe I ought to trade in my car and buy a new one.
Well, it's about time. What are you going to get, a Chandler or an Essex?
Oh, don't be funny. I'm going to get a real... I'll take it.
Hello?
Hello, Jackson. I'm calling from the country club. I thought maybe you'd come out and play some golf.
Well, I can't today. I'm going out and buy a new car.
Operator, you gave me the wrong number.
He did not. It's me. And I am going to buy a car.
Oh. What kind of a car are you going to get, Jackson?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking of getting a Cadillac.
Operator, why can't I get
You've
the
got
right
the
number.
Right number? I told you it's me.
Oh.
You asked me if I wanted to play golf, and I told you I couldn't.
Well, look, Jackson, I'm running a picture at my house tonight. Would you like to come over and see it?
Gee, I'd love to, but I can't. You see, last night I broke my glasses.
Oh, how'd you break them?
I fell off the runway.
Operator, I wish you'd give me
You
the
got
right.
it! You got it! Phil, it's me, Gypsy. I mean, Jackson. Phil, I'm sorry. Phil, I'm sorry I can't play golf with you. Why don't you call Remley?
I call Remley. He's right here now.
Oh, Frankie's with you, eh?
Yeah, he's sitting over there at the table drinking a glass of milk.
Operator! Somebody else is on.
No, Jackson. It's me. Oh.
That was a topping routine that's used very frequently in situation comedy. Another word about situation comedy here. Unlike gags, situation comedy doesn't rely on verbal punchlines for laughs. It's the humor lying between the punchlines that identifies true situation comedy. The backbone of situation comedy is humorous action, but it must be supported by elements of characterization and gags. In a comedy situation, something funny must happen. Both the treatment and the action take a humorous turn. The action must exaggerate towards the comic, and the treatment must be ludicrous. One of the basic comedy formulas for situation comedy is misunderstanding. After hearing an example of misunderstanding, listen to some of your favorite comedy shows and notice how often it's used. The situation is based on misunderstanding when there's a confusion of viewpoints about a single action and results in conflict that appears ludicrous to the audience, which is aware of all sides of the action. I've selected another scene from the Benny Show to illustrate the formula of misunderstanding. Notice the confusion of viewpoints on the one action. You see, Jack's been using the ironing board as a runway to practice his dance routine for television.
You know, Rochester, maybe I ought to try and...
I'll get it.
Say, Rochester, no matter who it is, don't mention anything about the new dance I've been working on.
I won't.
Remember.
Coming!
Hello, Rochester.
Oh, hello, Miss Livingston. Come on in.
Mr. Benny home?
Yeah, he's getting dressed. He'll be down in a minute.
Well, then I'll wait. And don't let me interrupt you, Rochester. Go ahead and finish your ironing.
Ironing?
Yes, you've got the ironing board up, haven't you?
Oh, I wasn't using that. You see, Mr. Benny was... Uh-oh.
Mr. Benny was what?
Well, he was, he was getting ready to wallpaper the living room.
Well, back home I used to help my mother paper our house, and Mr. Benny is going at it the wrong way. It seems to me
Well, good morning, Mary.
Oh, good morning, Jack. Rochester told me what you were doing with the ironing board.
Oh, he did, eh? Rochester, I told you not to say anything about what...
But, Jack, you should be glad he told me. I can show you a few tricks.
You... What do you know about it?
Oh, I used to do it with my mother.
What?
Mama was wonderful. She used to work with a brush in each hand.
A brush in each hand? Well, didn't your father object?
No, if she didn't do it, he'd have to.
Mary, dollface, what are you talking about?
Wallpapering the house.
Oh, wallpapering. Oh, of course.
One of the main reasons that misunderstanding routine got such audience response is because of characterization. Regardless of how a comedy performer might be characterized, he must be received affectionately. That's one of the main points to remember in comedy writing. Even a wise guy sort of character must be sympathetic to be effective. Let him be the butt of his own jokes or someone else's. In other words, the fall guy. Let him appear foolish. Once your comedian gains listener sympathy, he'll win their confidence, and they'll go along with him on a gag. Henry Morgan's sympathetic because he's on the side of the common man and illustrates the folly of our common weaknesses. We sympathize with Fibber McGee because he's usually the foil for his own plots. Bob Hope, a personality who transcends any contrived characterization, nevertheless achieves sympathy by taking gag after gag on himself, usually by the insult device. Listen as Bob Hope meets one of his guest stars, vaudeville star Joe Frisco.
Hello, Frisco.
Beat it, kid. I got my ration form.
But, Joe, I'm Bob Hope. We were in vaudeville together. You must remember me.
I don't even remember vaudeville. Oh, yes. I didn't recognize. You got heavy.
I'm not so fat. I guess I would have to take off a few pounds to be a jockey.
You'd have to take off a few pounds to be a horse.
I...
The main point is, whether the comedian is a satirist, a gag man, or has the casual light touch, he must be received affectionately by the audience. And this can be done by gags, characterization, or by situations. Jack Benny is sympathetic through characterization, Amos and Andy through situations, and Milton Berle and Herb Shriner through gags. Herb Shriner, a new comedian on the scene, brings a whimsical type of humor to radio listeners. He achieves sympathy through a light form of satire on topical issues of the day. This comedy form is a gag show achieved through characterization. Here's Herb Shriner on nightclubs.
You know, I couldn't think of nothing. She wanted to go to a nightclub, you see, and, I figured I'd take her. I wanted to get a look in there myself. I don't go very often to nightclubs because, by the time, I'm usually in bed by the time they open, to tell you the truth, and, I took her to this one over here anyways that, the Genuine Nightclub had a check room. When you come in, there's a girl there asked me for my hat, said I had to check it. And, I thought I wasn't going to get in there for a minute. See, I don't wear no hat, and I didn't have none to check, you know. And But she's pretty nice. She rented me a hat there to check. It made me, we got started there, and everybody was dressed up. They had a fellow, a head waiter, and had a tuxedo on. And a very friendly fella come over and stretch his arm out to shake hands with me right away, you know. And I had a hard time shaking hands with him because he must have had a crick in his back. He had his palm facing up, you know, and I had kind of a hard time to shake hands there. Anyway, pretty interesting. But, you know, when you have a big crowd like that, it makes it very uncomfortable. And I just couldn't figure out why folks would go to a nightclub anyway. I don't know. They just, most people go there to be seen, I guess, you know, and then it's usually so smoky that nobody can see anyway. You might as well not go. I mean, this one here was awful smoky. We had, I would have suffocated in there from the smoke, but I believe I got a hold of some fresh air. There was a lady selling cigarettes with a filter in them, and I busted a cigarette in two when I was breathing through that filter, you see. And it was pretty good. But I'll tell you one thing. A lot of people mention nightclubs, and usually you go to one, if it isn't a good one, why it's crowded and expensive and kind of smoky in there, you know, and you get the very same effect. You just get into a phone booth and tear up your money and set fire to your clothes, you know. I mean, it's the same thing.
On the second reel of this comedy writing study, I'd like you to listen to three different styles of comedy shows and try to pick out the method or formula for each show. Each program is entirely different from the other, and the method of construction of the comedy material each calls for an understanding and knowledge of the devices we've illustrated in the first part. Remember, some of the most important are exaggeration, insults, the use of a running gag, a silly or ridiculous picture, use of specific words, the two-way gag form and its extension by use of repetition and an abrupt vocal change or intonation, topping, and the wide use of misunderstanding. Pay particular attention to the method in which the comedian gains listener response through sympathy for him. First up is a Milton Berle routine.
Thank you. Come on, folks, start laughing early. To the person who laughs loudest tonight, I'm giving two tickets to South Pacific. Really, and the boat leaves in 20 minutes.
The boat leaves in 20 minutes!
You know, that's called an opening joke, you see. And really, and the ground should open up under the writer who gave it to me. But I don't care, because I'm in solid with the sponsor. Yesterday, I dropped into the Texaco station, and the dealer grabbed my hand and shook it. He had to. It was in the cash register. I don't have to do this for a living. I have a diaper concession in the Bronx. But this, I can always go back to diapers for a change. Come on, folks, laugh, please. I really need you tonight. My mother has laryngitis. But I really feel great. I really feel one of the publicity that I've been getting. Last week, my picture's on the cover of Time and Newsweek, two magazines. And of the two magazines, they don't know which sold more copies, Collier's or Liberty. Next week, my picture will be on the cover of Field and Stream with a fish hook in my mouth. But if you think that I'm getting publicity, next year they're putting my brother Frank's picture on all income tax forms, illustrating a dependent. But our family, they're wonderful. That we have our own money plan. Every Saturday, we all show up with our salaries and put it into one big pool. Then my brother shows up with a diving helmet. Oh, that brother Frank of mine, for 17 years, he hasn't done a thing. 17 years. He's even a year ahead of the Republicans. Don't applaud, please. No, please don't. No, it upsets the pizza next door at Zucker's restaurant, you see. And if you've ever eaten an upset pizza, you know what it means. Where's Mr. Gallup? Oh, Mr. Gallup! Mr. Gallup!
What is it, Bill?
What is it, Bill?
How do you like that Gallup? For 35 weeks, he's been talking about Texaco chassis lubrication, and he still hasn't marfacked his throat. Did it ask it? Well, Mr. Gallup, tell me, what's new?
On this program, nothing.
Oh, Mr. Gallup, you're so delightful. You're a regular puss in boots. Whenever I see that puss, I want to boot it. Bandy words with verbal. Don't ad lib with me, old boy. Mr. Gallup, humor like mine has to be trained.
Trained? Yours isn't even housebroken.
Quiet! That's jazzy. Get that Gallup, the boy with the green hair and complexion to match. With those thin legs and that long beak, he looks like something that just dropped four bundles in the Bronx. Get that figure. He is the only man who can do an about-face inside his suit. But Mr. Gallup, he's our announcer. He's swell. He sells the Fire Chief. He sells the Sky Chief. He sells the Haviland, and that's what he looks like, the death of a salesman. I don't want to insult you, Mr. Gallup. That's the only kind of jokes I know, because after all, I'm not like the other comedians. I can't joke about my appearance. I'm young. I'm not unattractive. I have my own hair. My own teeth. No bags under on my eyes. What have I to joke about?
Your big belly, your 14 toes, the fact that you have an empty and negative personality, and a completely boorish and nauseating appearance.
I mean, besides that. After all, Mr. Gallup, my comedy...
Oh, comedy, comedy. Can't we spend some time commenting on important issues?
Important issues?
Yes. Now, for instance, the Russians just lifted the blockade.
The blockade? That was a joke.
Burl, if that was a joke, you'd have lifted it.
Quiet now! Folks, have you noticed Mr. Gallup has that wonderful knack of taking a joke that can't possibly get a laugh and proving it?
Now for the opposite style of comedy construction. Listen to a situation style of program. Notice how the humor carries along even between the laughs, and how the characterization is made complete by the use of the situation and supported by gags. Remember, the characterization should be consistent throughout. Gags can build characterization, and characterization can build gags. That's the main reason this show has been so popular through the years.
My, that's an awfully long letter you're writing, McGee. Who do we know that deserves that?
This ain't a letter, Tootsie. I'm writing a movie. Little project that's going to make me famous and both of us rich. Hey, how do you spell century?
C-E-N-T-U-R-Y.
That's the way I got it, and it don't look right.
How are you using it?
Well, I say rifle on shoulder, keen senses alert to every sound, the century was walking his post.
That's century, dearie. S-E-N-T-R-Y.
I thought a century was 100 years.
No, that's century.
Yeah? I guess you're right at that. I've done century duty in the Army, and by the time you get relieved, it sure seems like 100 years.
Tell me more about this movie you're writing, sweetheart.
I said a movie, but that's just one angle of it.
Oh?
First, I'll make it into a movie, then a best-selling book, then it'll go into a two-bit drugstore reprint and be syndicated in the newspapers.
Oh?
Now, you say the movie people pay me a nominal fee of $200,000.
For a nominal fee, dearie, that's pretty nominal. But what's the story about?
Well, do you remember seeing a movie where Don Ameche invented the telephone?
Yes, and I saw the sequel to it, too. Sorry, wrong number.
Well, they've done the story of the telephone, the story of radium, the story of baseball, Al Jolson, the Philadelphia story, but what's the story they haven't done?
What?
The story of the typewriter. Ain't that a Lulu?
It's a garbage we used to see in Peoria.
You betcha. When you stop and think how the typewriter is tied up to culture, commerce, business, communication, why am I
It's
God?
Amazing that nobody ever thought of it before.
Well, that's what they said when the non-skid paperclip was invented, kiddo. Sir, and the zipper. Just Yankee ingenuity.
You mean every Yank needs a zipper and vice versa?
Yeah. Well, I gotta get busy, buddy. Can't mess around with $500,000 at stake.
Done any research on the subject of the typewriter, McGee?
Plenty, Tootsie. Spent nearly 15 minutes with the encyclopedia, for one thing. For another thing, I may go to the library a little later. For the doorbell, doorbell, doorbell. All day long, how can a guy write movie scenarios with that doorbell clanging at all hours of the day?
That's the first time it's rung this morning, Ted.
Well, it won't be the last if I know Tootsie, and I oughta. Come in.
Oh, it's Dr. Gamble, McGee. Do come in, Doctor.
Thank you, my dear. Good morning, Stern Wheeler.
Hi, Gas Pain. May I give you a word of advice?
Certainly. It won't be worth anything, and I probably won't take it, but I know better than to try to stop you.
What is it, dearie?
I just wanted to advise the good Dr. Gamble that the next time he calls on an author, to make an appointment first. Don't just barge in like a cub bear jumping into a hollow log.
Did you say author, Possum Face? What are you authoring, a book on bad manners? I'll give you a title. How to Pull Chairs Out from Under Ladies, or Digging Post Holes with Emily.
He's writing a movie, Doctor. They say there's good money in it if you can do it.
Good money in Fort Knox if you can get at it.
Look, Consul Nipper. You stick to your racket and I'll stick to mine. You don't tell me how to get literary, and I won't tell you how to retouch a millionaire's x-rays so it looks like he's got ulcers.
Now I'll give you some advice, then let you go on your merry Hemingway. Don't be an author. It's a tough life.
Speaking from experience, Doctor?
No, but my brother is an author, and for him, life is just one boring round of receptions and teas.
What does he write, Batso?
He writes a comic strip.
Oh, you mean a comic strip writer has to attend a lot of literary teams?
No, just strips, to be
Get with it, Elizabeth. Go on, Molly. Boy, I can hardly wait to see Doc's face when those movie people... One of these days, we'll have a swimming pool and a private yacht and our own box at the races.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
We can take turns standing on it.
Well, back to work, Snooky. Bring me some black coffee, will you? That'll keep me awake.
Keep you awake? You've only been out of bed 2 hours. Besides, you don't like black coffee.
I gotta like it. I gotta learn to like it. All authors live on black coffee and smoke pipes.
To finish this comedy writing series, I've tried to select a portion of the show that illustrates many of the devices of comedy that are used on the air today. This is not a true situation show. It's characterization situation that's supported by gags and almost every other comedy device, props, vocal changes, misunderstanding, topping, and insults. Yet there's sympathy for the comedian. Notice the clean comedy construction all the way through the sketch. The rules of writing comedy are few but important. One, be brief. Use as few words and lines as possible. Make them graphic and make each one count. Be clear. Choose words that are simple and precise, and lines that are short and descriptive. Be direct. Go straightway from start to finish in a dynamic fashion, whether it's brisk or leisurely. Be natural. Write in the vernacular with suitable expressions for easy reading. That's important. Be funny. Follow and use the gag formulas and the devices, and be liberal in their application. Now here's our final comedy bit. See what you might do with the same situation. Jack Benny has gone to the home of his violin teacher, Professor LeBlanc. The professor has been unable to go to Benny's home because of a sprained ankle. Listen to all of the formulas that are used.
Does Professor LeBlanc live here?
Oui, I am Mrs. LeBlanc.
Well, I'm Jack Benny.
Sacre bleu.
Thank you.
Joseph, who is he?
Oh, it's me, Professor. I heard what happened to you, so I came over here for my lesson.
Sacre bleu.
Thank you. Professor, how's your sprained ankle?
A dismal failure.
What?
Nothing. If you are here for a lesson, let's get it over with.
Oui. I mean, yes. Now, Professor, when you were giving me my last lesson, what were we doing?
You were playing the Blue Danube, and I was picking up the dead flies.
No. I mean, after that. Anyway, what number do you want me to play today?
The same one you have been practicing for weeks and weeks and weeks. Minuet Lentique.
Oh, yes. Here, I'll get my violin out of the cage.
Suzette, aren't you going to kiss me goodbye?
I am not going out.
You will in a minute.
Well, here we are. Now, just a second. I better tune up.
Does not make any difference.
Oh, yes. I have to be in tune. Now, shall I start with the minuet lentique?
Start with anything.
Okay.
No, Monsieur Benny. Every week you make the same mistake. How many times do I have to tell you it is not da 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 da?
Oh,
you have to slide. Da.
Oh yes. I'll get it this time.
Sacré bleu.
Thank you. Too high.
But it means you stink.
It sounds lovely in French.